peculiarity which induces guffaws among the thoughtless. She was burdened with a lot of small parcels, which she kept dropping. She chose one seat, and then, not liking it, chose another, and then another. In a few moments she had the whole restaurant laughing at her. That my middle-aged Breton should laugh was indifferent to me, but I was pained to see a coarse grimace of giggling on the pale face of that beautiful young waitress to whom I had never spoken. I reflected concerning the grotesque diner. This woman was once young, slim, perhaps beautiful, certainly free from these ridiculous mannerisms. Very probably she is unconscious of her singularities. Her case is a tragedy. One ought to be able to make a heart-rending novel out of the history of a woman such as she. Every stout, ageing woman is not grotesque, far from it. But there is an extreme pathos in the mere fact that every stout, ageing woman was once a young girl, with the unique charm of youth in her form and movements, and in her mind. And the fact that the change from young girl to stout, ageing woman is made up of an infinite number of infinitesimal changes, each unperceived by her, only intensifies the pathos. It was at this instant that I was visited by the idea of writing the book which ultimately became The Old Wives' Tale. Of course I felt that the woman who caused the ignoble mirth in the restaurant would not serve me as a type of heroine, for she was much too old and obviously unsympathetic. It is an absolute rule that the principal character of a novel must not be unsympathetic, and the whole modern tendency of realistic fiction is against oddness in a prominent figure. I knew that I must choose the sort of woman who would pass unnoticed in a crowd. I put the idea aside for a long time, but it was never very distant from me. For several reasons it made a special appeal to me. I had always been a convinced admirer of Mrs. W. K. Clifford's most precious novel, Aunt Anne, but I wanted to see in the story of an old woman many things that Mrs. W. K. Clifford had omitted from Aunt Anne. Moreover, I had always revolted against the absurd youthfulness, the unfading youthfulness of the average heroine. And as a protest against this fashion, I was already in 1903 planning a novel, Leonora, of which the heroine was aged 40 and had daughters old enough to be in love. The reviewers, by the way, were staggered by my hardihood in offering a woman of 40 as a subject of serious interest to the public, but I meant to go much further than 40. Finally, as a supreme reason, I had the example and the challenge of Guy de Maupassant's Une Vie. In the 90s, we used to regard Une Vie with mute awe as being the summit of achievement in fiction. And I remember being very cross with Mr. Bernard Shaw, because, having read Une Vie at the suggestion, I think, of Mr. William Archer, he failed to see in it anything very remarkable. Here I must confess that in 1908 I read Une Vie again, and in spite of a natural anxiety to differ from Mr. Bernard Shaw, I was gravely disappointed with it. It is a fine novel, but decidedly inferior to Pierre et Jean, or even Fort comme la Mort. To return to the year 1903, Une Vie relates the entire life history of a woman. I settled in the privacy of my own head that my book about the development of a young girl into a stout old lady must be the English Une Vie. I have been accused of every fault except a lack of self-confidence, and in a few weeks I settled a further point, namely, that my book must go one better than Une Vie, and that to this end it must be the life history of two women instead of only one. Hence, The Old Wives' Tale has two heroines. Constance was the original. Sophia was created out of bravado, just to indicate that I declined to consider Guy de Maupassant as the last forerunner of the deluge. I was intimidated by the audacity of my project, but I had sworn to carry it out. For several years I looked it squarely in the face at intervals, and then walked away to write novels of smaller scope, of which I produced five or six. But I could not dally for ever, and in the autumn of 1907 I actually began to write it in a village near Fontainebleau, where I rented half a house from a retired railway servant. I calculated that it